On this Sunday night, healthcare cliffhanger, new pushback from key Republican senators as leadership pushes for a vote on Obamacare repeal this week. How tens of millions get coverage is hanging in the balance. Violent flight, a loud bang, and nearly 2 hours of panic on a packed commercial jet shaking like a washing machine. The pilot telling passengers to pray. Frightening fall, a 14-year-old girl hanging on for dear life, then plunging 25 feet from an amusement park ride, a crowd rushing to save her below. Help wanted, a record number of job openings in America, and companies desperate to fill them. So why the holdup amid such high demand? And right on track, life-changing surprises for three inspiring sisters dreaming of the Olympics. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. It will be the talk of Capitol Hill this week, the Republican effort to finally make good on a promise to repeal and replace Obamacare. Senate leaders have said they want a vote by the end of this week, but with opposition from at least five Republican senators, it's unclear if the White House will get the win President Trump is looking for. Kelly O'Donnell has been following all the latest developments.
The president's prescription?
I want to see a bill with heart. Healthcare is a very complicated subject.
And his diagnosis of the acute political challenges around the Senate Republican healthcare bill.
You move it this way and this group doesn't like it. You move it a little bit over here. You have a very narrow path. And honestly, nobody can be totally happy.
The dissatisfaction is palpable as several reluctant Republican senators want to pump the brakes.
I have a hard time believing Wisconsin constituents or even myself will have enough time to properly evaluate this.
It's hard for me to see the bill passing this week, but that's up to the majority leader.
Right now, I am undecided.
For Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell and the Trump White House, the time crunch is a tool intended to compel Republicans to decide and deliver before the 4th of July fireworks go off. Tweaks and sweeteners to the proposal will likely come over the next few days, along with an official cost estimate. The proposed health insurance overhaul includes new rules regarding Medicaid that are already raising alarm bells. This year, under Obamacare, 31 states accepted expanded Medicaid funding, where the federal government pays for 90% of the public insurance plan for lower-income Americans. In 2020, the Senate GOP proposal would make states pay a larger share. By 2024, the federal government and states would split Medicaid costs. Conservatives defend that approach, claiming federal money will still be there.
It's never going to be cut. It's never going to shrink. It will eventually be growing at a slightly slower rate.
But if states can't afford to pay more, coverage cuts are inevitable.
The most vulnerable people in our society and health care providers, such as our rural hospitals and nursing home, most of whom are very dependent on the Medicaid programs.
And this is one instance where they are not trying to build suspense for some political theater. Insiders say they just can't predict how this will turn out. I'm told that key players are working tonight. They're looking at different variables, like adding funding for the opioid epidemic or helping rural hospitals, preparing different kinds of provisions that might be needed to win over one last deciding vote. Kate?
Kelly O'Donnell at the White House for us. And one more note from Washington. Tomorrow marks the final day of the Supreme Court term, with decisions expected in several closely watched cases. We could also hear if the court plans to take action on the president's travel ban from six Muslim-majority countries, which is currently blocked by lower courts. Separately, there is a lot of speculation about the court's key swing vote, Justice Anthony Kennedy, now 80 years old. Court watchers wondering if he might announce his retirement, something that traditionally happens at the end of a term. Now to a trio of air scares over the last 72 hours, including one caught on camera when a commercial jet with hundreds of passengers on board started violently shaking for nearly 2 hours. Passengers rattling in their seats, the pilot telling them to pray. We get details from NBC's Steve Patterson.
For 90 terrifying minutes, panicked passengers trapped in the sky with this. Violent shaking that started with a loud bang. One passenger said it felt like he was in a washing machine. It happened about an hour into Air Asia flight D7237. 359 passengers from Perth, Australia, bound for Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. The shuddering so bad, the plane forced to turn around.
Please pay attention. And also, please listen to the briefing. Our survival depends on your cooperating.
You could just tell by the cabin crew's reaction that it was really bad.
We all thought, you know, we're just going to go down.
Finally, a safe landing back in Perth with no one hurt. Air Asia says the incident was due to a technical issue.
Air Asia experienced an engine failure. It was not a threat to the airplane. It's uncomfortable and unnerving to some passengers, but as far as it is something the pilots train for.
It was just the latest mid-air incident.
We just evacuated a plane.
On Friday, smoke filled the cockpit on a JetBlue flight from New York to Fort Lauderdale, the plane forced to land in Charleston.
We had to make an emergency landing, and we got to use the slidey door thing.
And on Saturday, an American Airlines flight from Philadelphia to Frankfurt, Germany, turned around after 3 hours. Passengers were told there was a possible navigation malfunction.
I just spent about 6 hours traveling nowhere. I'm a little frustrated, but I will be going home, thankfully.
A series of unsettling incidents in the sky, all ending free of tragedy, but full of fear and frustration. Steve Patterson, NBC News.
And from that to a scare closer to the ground, but no less harrowing, a teenage girl dangling from an amusement park ride, plunging 25 feet in front of horrified onlookers. Good Samaritans using their bodies to break her fall, perhaps saving her life. NBC's Katie Beck has the video.
Dangling in distress 25 feet above the ground.
Her neck is stuck.
A 14-year-old girl hangs on for dear life from a Six Flags Great Escape ride in upstate New York.
I saw this young person dangling by just her arms and head, basically, off the chair.
A group gathers beneath, the child's younger brother sitting beside her screaming for help.
Oh my God.
So I looked up and I said, honey, let go. I promise you I'll catch you.
Good Samaritan Matthew Howard Sr. at the park with his daughter Leanne suffered a back injury trying to catch her. They say she fell into both of them.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You know, security guards, they were saying, everyone back up. I was like, no, because if she falls, I'm going to do everything in my power to save her. This little girl's not dying on my watch.
The teen is now in stable condition. Six Flags released this statement in part saying, this morning, the New York Department of Labor has cleared the ride for operation. Out of an abundance of caution, the ride will remain closed while we conduct a thorough internal review.
Find out, you know, if there was a problem when they were loading the ride. Find out if they did the daily check sheet for the ride.
In April, a roller coaster near Baltimore left 24 passengers stuck sky high for nearly 4 hours. And last month in California, a young boy flew off a water slide at the Emerald Glen Park, thankfully only suffering minor injuries.
There's absolutely no one source of amusement ride enforcement. Each state is left up to enforce their own rules the way they see fit.
A reminder to thrill seekers. They come with a risk. Katie Beck, NBC News, Atlanta.
Overseas now to a tragic inferno in Pakistan. It started with a crash involving an overturned oil tanker truck. Hundreds of villagers had gathered to collect spilled fuel when the truck suddenly burst into flames, killing at least 153 people in Punjab province in the eastern part of that country. NBC's Lucy Kafanov has more.
Anguish and disbelief in Pakistan today as an ordinary road accident turned into a deadly inferno. A speeding oil tanker carrying thousands of gallons of fuel on a rural stretch of highway this morning blew a tire and flipped, bursting into flames 45 minutes later. This video showing the calm before the blast, with locals, many of whom live on less than $3 a day, rushing to the scene, using buckets and shopping bags to collect the valuable fuel leaking from the damaged tanker. Witnesses say the crowd numbered in the hundreds before the explosion. This man says someone lit a match to smoke a cigarette when suddenly the explosion happened, engulfing the villagers. My uncle escaped, he says, but his son died. This is all that's left of the vehicles. Many of the victims, including at least 20 children, were burned beyond recognition. Officials say they'll have to be identified using DNA, something that could take weeks. Distraught relatives gathered at local hospitals, desperate for word of loved ones. Many of the survivors suffered serious burns, alive but charred by the blaze. The Army rushing about 40 of the most critically wounded by helicopter to other hospitals. For Muslims across the world, this was supposed to be a night of celebration, with the faithful gathering to mark the end of Islam's holy month of Ramadan. But in Pakistan tonight, grief, mourning, and funerals to plan. Lucy Kafanov, NBC News.
There are new concerns being raised tonight about the so-called alt-right holding one of several competing rallies in the nation's capital this Sunday, as watchdog groups warn their racial rhetoric is spreading, including recruitment on college campuses. We get more from NBC's Morgan Radford.
Today in Washington, conservative rallies fighting over the future of the country.
Build the wall!
And who it should belong to. Many gathered here are part of a new movement called the alt-right, which believes in protecting white European identity, ideas traditionally associated with white supremacy. The term was coined by Richard Spencer just a few years ago. He credits the election of President Trump with thrusting the movement into the national spotlight.
Donald Trump was an indispensable vehicle for the rise of the alt-right.
Do you think this election brought you closer to the mainstream?
No question. We unquestionably were brought to the mainstream through Donald Trump talking about our issues.
Issues like immigration reform, American jobs, and free speech. Their message, wrapped in symbolism, many say is reminiscent of Nazi Germany.
Hail Trump! Hail our people! Hail victory!
Their endorsement of Trump isn't mutual. The president has denounced all forms of bigotry. Still, the alt-right has become a growing concern for watchdog organizations, who say they are particularly dangerous because they target young people through social media and on college campuses.
Today, they're wearing business suits. But make no mistake, 100 years ago they were wearing white hoods. Today, they're just hiding behind Twitter accounts and social media.
Nathan D'Amigo is the founder of an alt-right group.
We ourselves started with about 12 members last year. Now we have about 625 members, and we're looking to double that next year.
You will not replace us! You will not replace us!
A growing membership that experts say is more threatening in the dark.
Does talking about these groups hurt or help?
We owe it to ourselves and to the public to call this out. When we take our eye off the ball, the bad guys move on to the field. Can't allow that to happen.
It's not just political institutions that are now facing challenges in how to handle this movement. At the most recent convention of the Southern Baptist Church, they grappled with a resolution to condemn the alt-right. And it just goes to show that this struggle isn't confined to rallies in D.C. It's also a struggle right here in our communities, Kate.
Morgan Radford, thank you. Still ahead tonight, workers wanted, American companies with millions of jobs to fill. So why are so many jobs still sitting open? Also to the streets this Sunday for a worldwide celebration of pride. Back now with the story of the giant help wanted sign hanging over America. As the recovery from the Great Recession continues, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reports the country now has a record-setting 6 million jobs open. But even with so many openings, employers are struggling to find qualified workers. NBC's Stephanie Rule explains why.
Larimer County, Colorado needs people. At 2.3%, Colorado has the country's lowest unemployment rate. At the Larimer County Workforce Center, a shift in focus.
We are certainly still helping people find positions, but a lot of the external pressures that are on us are towards helping employers find skilled workers.
This northern Colorado area added 20,000 jobs in the past 5 years, but only 11,000 people. Local employers will have another 28,000 openings to fill over the next 5 years. It's a story playing out nationwide, with unemployment now at 4.3%. The rate of increase in job openings far outpacing the increase in actual hires. Many employers point to a skills gap in the labor force, a mismatch between the jobs they're trying to fill and the workers needed to fill them.
But about 95% of hiring is to hire people who are experienced. And so what they're after are people with quite specific skills.
But critics of the skills gap idea point the finger at employers. They argue with unemployment so low, companies should feel pressure to boost wages. Instead, what we've seen since the last recession ended in 2009 is stagnating wage growth.
Employers are reluctant to raise wages. We understand why. But as the economy tightens, it gets more and more difficult to hire people.
We're here today to celebrate the dignity of work.
Earlier this month, President Trump signed an executive order expanding federal funding for apprenticeship programs. In northern Colorado, the help can't come soon enough.
Almost every employer that we speak to is having trouble finding the skilled candidates that they need.
And employers may have to start digging deeper into their own pockets to get the resource they need most. People. Stephanie Rule, NBC News, New York.
And a program note, make sure to stay tuned for Megyn Kelly's interview with best-selling author J.D. Vance, whose personal story about growing up in a poor family from Appalachia is being read as a dissertation on working-class America. That's coming up tonight, Sunday night, with Megyn Kelly right here on NBC. Up next tonight, tiny little pictures worth a thousand words. A wave of pride today around the world, from Paris to Mexico City and here in the U.S. Marchers took to the streets in cities from New York and Minneapolis to San Francisco and Seattle, where a sea of thousands packed colorful parade routes, waving flags, cheering and dancing, part of a month-long celebration of LGBTQ triumphs and highlighting the fight for rights that is still ongoing. OMG, there is a whole new way to express yourself coming to your smartphone, over 100 new ways, in fact, a fresh batch of emojis, those tiny pictures that millions of teens and, let's face it, more than a few adults use to communicate these days. But do you ever wonder where they come from and who decides what's in and what's out? We sent NBC News business correspondent Jolene Kent to find out.
If a picture's worth a thousand words, an emoji might be worth a thousand texts. 137 new little pictograms are headed your way. Broccoli, zombies, a T-Rex, and dumplings. Emojis are everywhere. 6 billion sent every single day. There's even an emoji movie.
We're watching a whole new means of expression that's used around the world come into being right in front of our very eyes.
Greg Welch is a director of the Unicode Consortium, the nonprofit that decides which emojis will get made and writes the code that creates them.
Our process is open. This is what I said. It's not a dark star chamber. So you can actually go on the website and look at the list of emoji that are in the vetting.
Anyone can propose an emoji. Not everything the public wants makes the cut. But once it's approved by Unicode,
this one,
designers at tech companies like Apple and Google get to work.
Different companies have different types of emojis. Apple has their own set, and Google and Android have their own set.
Rachel Bean heads up the design team at Google that brings emojis to life.
We kind of define the look and the feel and sort of some of the concepts behind what the emojis look like.
The newest batch includes gender-neutral people and a woman in a headscarf, all requested by the public.
So we wanted to try and sort of disassociate from these really cultural stereotypes of genders, of putting women in pink and men in blue, and kind of move beyond that.
You have a lot of power as you design emoji.
I think that's an incredible part, that it's a really open process. And that's cool that anyone in the world can submit an emoji.
The new set of emojis is arriving on your smartphone now. Jolene Kent, NBC News, San Francisco.
We need a nightly news emoji. When we come back, sisters with big dreams of the Olympics, inspiring so many, including a Hollywood heavyweight, reaching out with a life-changing surprise. Finally tonight, an update to a story we first brought you this spring about three sisters, junior Olympians, tearing it up on the track in spite of the fact that at night they had no home to rest their heads. Oh, how their lives have changed since then. Our Kristen Dahlgren tonight with the inspiring update.
At first glance, the Shepherd sisters look like any other star-struck fans at the U.S. Track and Field Outdoor Championships in Sacramento. But these three have come a long way.
Where are you from?
I'm from Brooklyn, New York.
In more ways than one. We first met Brooke, Rain, and Ty last March in a Brooklyn homeless shelter where they all shared one bed with their mom, Tanya. The girls, 9, 11, and 12, found solace in running track.
Track gives us hope and strength to move on from our problems.
They also found success, winning medals, landing magazine covers. Since our story aired, comedian Tyler Perry offered to pay rent for 2 years. Now in a new apartment, Tanya has a new job.
Hi, how you doing?
And this weekend, the girls got a VIP invitation to the Nationals to meet some of the greatest athletes of all time, Olympic gold medalist Allyson Felix and legend Carl Lewis.
Big smiles.
Sprinter Justin Gatlin gave them his first place medal.
Thank you.
It was very exciting and mind-blowing.
And high jumper Vashti Cunningham brought Brooke onto the podium. The Shepherds haven't forgotten how hard it was to get here.
Our past is still like, it's still a part of us, and just because we have all of this now and we're grateful for it doesn't mean that we have to change because of it.
Oh, thank you. Thank
you. In fact, they say after seeing this, they plan to work even harder.
Never stop doing what you think you're capable of doing because of what other people say.
And what's next for you guys?
Olympics.
For now, though, it's time to go home, which may not be such a bad thing now that it's finally a place of their own. Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, Sacramento.
Just terrific. That is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday night. Lester Holt will be in tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow reporting from New York. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.